Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 46, being recorded on the 1st of October, 2014, with special guest Andrew Connell. My name is Sujit Mello. I'm a senior consultant with Microsoft in the app dev space based out of New Jersey. And on Skype with me, I have my esteemed colleague Evan and our special guest. Okay? Please introduce yourself.
Hey, guys. This is Evan Basilik. I'm a senior support escalation engineer on the Windows team supporting Azure IaaS out of our North Carolina office.
This is Andrew Connell. I'm a SharePoint / Office 365 developer with a background, just long background in SharePoint training and getting more and more, doing more and more stuff in Azure these days.
Okay. And Andrew, I know we were briefly talking earlier. You've got a lot of background in SharePoint and recently got into Azure. And Andrew was one of our listeners who pinged us on our Twitter handle, and we definitely encourage our listeners to reach out to us on that Twitter handle if they have any questions for us or would like to contribute to the show. And his background is very, very unique, and we thought it'd be very useful for our listeners to understand how someone can blend, a mix of backgrounds and with Azure and come up with a very successful mix. So great to have you on the show, Andrew.
Absolutely. Thanks. It's a, I guess, long-time listener, first-time caller kind of thing.
now we do have to make clear to our other audiences out there that just because you talk to us on Twitter doesn't mean we're going to force you to come. This was completely optional on your side, and you know, we'd love to have you. So thank you very much for coming on.
Absolutely. I run a podcast myself, so I totally get it. It's always nice to have new people to come on and share different perspectives and stuff.
Definitely.
We'll put a link to your podcast in our show notes as well. So definitely give you a plug there. Cool. So, normally before we dive into the meat of our discussion, which today is going to be on the topic of Office 365 apps hosted on Azure and how you do authentication and things like that. You've come up with some interesting ways to do it. And we also want to learn more about what your development environment is like. You use a lot of Mac hardware, and yet you're able to be very successful in, you know, developing software for Azure. So we'd love to just dive a little bit into that in a bit. But before we get started, there's a couple of things. First, we have a tip of the week. And Evan, have you seen that this tip about the using?
I did. The really interesting, but this was talking about using Azure Automation to kind of replace SQL Agent.
Right.
And they talk about the tip. It's dead on. I mean, we get a lot of complaints for Azure SQL Database that it doesn't have SQL Agent and some other functionality. And this tip is great at showing how to do it. The other thing that I would actually encourage people to look at, this is actually something I'm looking at putting into place for my team as well, is you could actually use something like Azure Automation to go in every day and shut down and restart your VMs. And, PowerShell can do it. You can do startup tasks, all those things to do it. But, if you really wanted to kind of use the latest and greatest, you could do that with Azure Automation. And you don't even have to use certificates anymore with that. They use Azure AD for authentication now.
I see. And are you saying, when you say shut down and startup, you mean shut it down so you don't get billed anymore? Is that right?
Yeah. So we actually see a lot of customers who, Azure is consumption based, right? If you're just doing a dev machine or some testing, you don't necessarily want to leave that running overnight. I mean, as a Microsoft employee and shareholder, feel free to leave it running overnight. But not everybody wants to do that. So, people will shut it down and start up. A lot of people I know will manually do it, or they'll have a local PowerShell that they run. Here, you could just stick it up in Azure Automation and just tell it to run, in the morning, start everything up, and then in the evening, start everything down.
Excellent. That's great. So that's we'll add that tip to the show notes. The other update we wanted to give some of I'm sure Andrew, you probably heard about these, right? The pricing reductions in Azure.
We were talking about it on our podcast today. Just in fact.
Oh, okay. It's a wide variety of drops, in different areas of Azure. I guess one thing that was kind of missing was just a basic IaaS service. That there wasn't a drop in that particular area, but a lot of the other services that they have, the BizTalk, the backup, the cache, and a lot of the
Express
Route, all the networking features, exactly, and even the cost for data egress, which, as you know, every byte out of the system is charged. So all that, there's been some significant drops. They vary from about 10% to 25%, 30% in some cases. So definitely we'll put a link to that, and just a testament to how they're being very aggressive in trying to keep the prices down and pass on the savings to our users and listeners. Yeah. And then the final update. So this is something new there. I guess this was bound to happen at some point or the other. There is now kind of preview of an MCP exam for Azure. Okay, what do you guys feel about about this whole certification thing? First of all, what's your take on it, Andrew?
Well, I guess I'm a bit jaded because I've in the past been involved in actually helping create some of these exams for Microsoft on the SharePoint side from maybe like 5-7 years ago, and I've never been terribly impressed with the questions that come up with it. Mm-hmm. But the thing that is disappointing to me is that I find a lot of people rush to go get the certifications and then expect that to be a pretty good thing to have on the resume to say that you've earned your chops. And these days it just seemed I'd rather know the kind of work that you've been doing and the kind of stuff that you've been doing. I usually brush over any of the certifications, and this isn't just it's not a Microsoft thing. It's just in general. I'm not big on certifications. I want to see the work that you've done. I want to see your LinkedIn profile.
Right. The experience matters. It's just not the theory.
Yeah. I would tend to agree. Although I will say I do like the certifications for as kind of a guideline for people to say, hey, go look at, these are the things,
right,
that are encompassed in this technology or this product. I know when I was first hired on to do SQL Server, I was a developer before I'd done did SQL Server support, and I didn't even do a full certification. I just took one of the tests just to force me to spend some time learning about backup, spend some time learning about memory, spend all these different things just to kind of encompass a general knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. When you turn around in day to day, the things that are on that test are not the things you're going to do day in, day out. But I think just getting the exposure to it is useful. But you're right. I tend to just kind of skip over them and say, hey, okay, great. You got them. What did you actually do?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that the thing from if it's an infrastructure / IT pro, administrative kind of thing, they certainly help in that sense. And they also give you a pretty good blueprint for, like, on the developer side to run through. But it to me, it always was, throw somebody a sample project, like some proof of concept thing that touches a few things, and say, all right, go figure it out, because you've got to now figure out what the different pieces are you have to go touch, how they work together, what the pitfalls are, and all that stuff. And so it's something kind of real world that you can play with, and you can even run down certain paths if you feel that certain things are interesting to you too. So they are for some people, they're not for others. And that's my take.
Agreed.
And so if any of our listeners are interested in doing this, there is the sort of a beta of this exam now, and we'll put a show notes of that in the link. We'll put a link in the show notes with the information about the beta exam.
Yeah, actually, I'll full honesty here, I actually am looking at asking my team to go do this, because we struggle ourselves the same way as, Andrew, people like you and our customers, trying to keep up with all the things in the Azure space.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm contemplating pushing my team to go do it just for, like I said, get you some exposure, some things you don't have to support. You don't have to be super great at them. I don't even necessarily care if you pass, but I want you to go get it, see the questions, see the things, and just see some things you might not ever dig into.
Mm-hmm.
So, great.
That sounds like a good idea.
They don't know that yet, by the way.
Hopefully they don't listen to the podcast.
It's funny you say it like that, too, because that's, I mean, the product that I've got a background with, the SharePoint, it has similarities in the sense that it is so big and you can't get your arms around the entire thing as an expert. And the way I like to, I teach people in my class about it when I teach SharePoint development. It's very much like walking into somebody else's kitchen and you look in the pantry and you look in the fridge. You can't just go ahead and start making dinner. You need to kind of take stock of what's there, and
yeah,
you're not going to use everything, but you at least kind of have to look around and figure out, what do I need to go run to the store to go grab, just to know what tools are available to you. So
agreed.
Yeah. And that's a good segue there. You mentioned your SharePoint work, Andrew. So let's dive a little bit into that area. So tell us some of the stuff that you've done with SharePoint apps, and you know, how you've been able to leverage Azure.
Yeah, so I guess I've been doing SharePoint for a very long time, since about 2003. And in the most recent version, the product has always struggled. It's a short version of explaining how we kind of got into Azure. I say we, the bigger SharePoint community. But for the longest time, SharePoint's always been an on-premises product that you would install on the corporate hardware behind the firewall, big capital expense. And Microsoft has done a lot of work to move it to be a much more, not just a product that was great for the mid and large cap market, but also one that is great for the small cap, and also to alleviate a lot of the pains that we have with managing SharePoint. SharePoint farms are very expensive, and they can take a lot of work to maintain. So they put this offering together that is SharePoint's a part of, called Office 365, where it's hosted Exchange, Link, SharePoint, Yammer, and a bunch of other things. And but the trick was is that we had to start to change the model of building custom stuff that would live in a full trust, work in a full trust way in the SharePoint process, and put the code somewhere else. And so with the release of SharePoint 2013 and the advent of Office 365, there's been a strong effort to get your code out of SharePoint, either running it somehow in the client. So with like these, you know, real fancy, like a single page app or Angular style applications running with JavaScript and stuff in the browser, or putting them in a server-based solution, and it just naturally makes sense to use Azure for those things. Although you're not bound in technology, but Azure makes the most sense because 365 runs in the Azure data centers. So a lot of the stuff that I've been focusing on is showing, I spend a lot of time lately talking to people who are not SharePoint developers and are trying to get into the space, or at least make them aware of the space, so that they know that I don't have to become, so to speak, a SharePoint developer or an Office 365 developer. If you have a .NET background, then Azure is a fantastic place to be because of the PaaS offering and because of how you can have so many tools available to you, to reuse that analogy, so many tools in the kitchen that are available to you, from websites to storage to different types of storage to caching and to all sorts of stuff. And then how can you build really robust and really sophisticated things that are running inside of Azure? And then how do you communicate and talk to SharePoint or talk to Office 365? It's been a fun ride, because it's been eye opening to a lot of people, to the people who have been SharePoint bound, is I guess one way to look at it. We've been doing SharePoint stuff for so long. It's a very freeing thing, because you no longer are limited to what the SharePoint release that you're working with supports. You are now kind of open to use anything that you want, because you're no longer building on top of a product and having to use the technologies that it's built on, but you're now building beside a product, and you now can work with anything. And with a platform like Azure, which ships brand new stuff and new features every, you know, 4 o'clock every afternoon, it seems, you can't, I mean, there's a ridiculous number of things that you can take advantage of. And so the tools that are available to you, I mean, we, you know, Evan, you were mentioning earlier that one of the tips was about using the scheduler to, restart your servers, or to run replace the agents for SQL Server. We've got a thing inside SharePoint called a timer job, and it's essentially SharePoint's context-aware scheduled task manager. And the only way you can build one of those is if you use fully trusted code, so it's only going to be allowed on-prem. But you, taking advantage of Azure, you can create a little console app, throw it up in a website, use the scheduler or use the web jobs capability, and let that thing talk back to your SharePoint environment, be it on-prem, be it 365, it doesn't matter. And let it come in as an app as well. So it's,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Andrew.
I was wrapping that up. So go ahead.
I was going to say that the one thing that I got to ask, the one thing that jumped out, at your comment is I love your comment about developing beside SharePoint. Cause you know, one of the things that we've talked about on this podcast a lot is Azure is not just one thing, right? It's a platform for a whole bunch of other things, but you don't always use everything. Right. Some projects use these pieces and some projects use those pieces. And, you know, I really like your beside because I think that really kind of, you know, you're not building SharePoint things on top of Azure necessarily. You're just leveraging parts of Azure. So you're next to it.
Yeah. There's one thing that we did actually recently. You're right. It's an analogy that I think is really starting to hit home with a lot of people. It works really well for SharePoint developers and it works very well for people who are actually coming into the platform. People who are not familiar with Azure, people who are not familiar with SharePoint or who are, or people who frankly aren't even on the .NET stack or the Microsoft stack at all. And
yep.
I'm talking to a lot of, a lot of the open source guys and the JavaScript community and, doing stuff with Node and just showing it's like, look, we can take advantage of Azure to do this stuff. And I'm a bit opinionated on this one, but I don't think that I'm too much rose colored glasses here, but of all the cloud offerings that are available to us, to me, the one that is founded on PaaS and that does the best execution of it and has a great developer story, it's Azure. I mean, Amazon's great, but it's primarily an IaaS solution with PaaS offerings.
Yep.
And Google's just getting into the game. But no one has, since Scott Guthrie took over the Azure side, it has just exploded with developer stuff, things that developers can take advantage of in custom applications. So.
Yeah.
It's been a fun ride the last, I'd say like 2 years-ish watching this evolve.
Yeah. So Sujeet, we're going to run that last minute or so on loop, right? That's right.
I'm going to put it in the sound bites episode for sure.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I've been, told is that this whole concept of apps in SharePoint hasn't picked up the way Microsoft hoped it would. In other words, there isn't a huge ecosystem of apps for SharePoint. Is this somewhat true or is that not right?
I struggle with this one right now because I have a bit of a – I'm not a big fan of how the marketing works right now, which is funny because a good friend of mine is heavily involved in it. But The thing for me is, you know, Microsoft likes to talk about apps with SharePoint. And I guess let me directly answer your question. That a lot of companies have dismissed it. Yes, they dismissed the app model. The main reason why they dismiss it is because if you look at the traditional SharePoint world that we've come from, which is founded, you know, started back in 2001, didn't really start to gain steam until 2007 with the SharePoint 2007 release. We hit a road bump in 2010 when they were trying to get people to get out of fully trusted code. They introduced something called Sandbox Solutions, which was not very well received by the customer base. And now we come out with apps. And a lot of customers kind of saw I saw you do it once with Sandbox. It was a one-and-done version. And so we're going to go at this app thing with a lot of trepidation and a lot of caution, which is, I mean, in business, it's a responsible thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
The thing, though, that I see a lot of people kind of pushing back on is that a lot of people are trying to say, how can I do the same thing I was doing with fully trusted code inside of an app? And to me, it's not the same thing. You're not doing the same thing. It's kind of like if I'm building an app for the desktop, it's going to probably be pretty tied into the desktop. And I'm not talking about like the Metro style apps. I'm talking like, you know, if you're building like Office 2013, it's going to be integrated in with the platform.
Right.
But if you're building an app for your phone, it's an isolated little thing that can communicate with some of the services that your phone provides, but it's not deep in the roots of your phone to where if the app blows up, you've got to wipe your phone.
Right.
So that's the model that we're working on trying to do a mind shift with a lot of customers and saying, look, I think that you want to look at SharePoint now as a great product that works great out of the box. It is very popular in terms of in the business community. It is for a lot of companies. It's the operating system for the business. But let's not use it as an app dev platform. Instead, if you want to build apps for your organization that are business line of business apps, then why don't we use SharePoint as a provider of services and capabilities that your app could take advantage of for an enterprise app, like workflow, like search, like user profiles, like document management. So, and that's part of the reason I think that why the app model is not really is not taking off as much, because people are trying to say, no, how do I do the same thing I did before? Taking my example before, how do I build a custom timer job and do it inside the app model? It's like, you're not. That's right. But you weren't supposed to be doing that in the first place. We just figured out how to do it. So, I think that it's the part that I say I'm a little opinionated on this, or a little jaded on, is that I think that the app model is a phrase for something that we don't have a better name for. Really, all it is, it says SharePoint has a way to create custom things, and those custom things that are going to be living outside of SharePoint, they need a way to identify and talk to SharePoint. That's using two different client-side endpoints. There's a REST API that we can talk to, and then there's one that's got a proxy layer around the REST API. It's called the client object model. And then it also now supports OAuth and app identity, so that my app can have an identity not tied to my user. Mm. Apps leverage that functionality to be able to give you a full development story, but I think that those, once you see that I can take advantage of those endpoints and those tools, I can build things outside of 365 and SharePoint that can take advantage of that. And then that's where the Azure story gets to be really, really interesting to customers.
Do you, I know you talk about, you know, that how, you know, it's not so much the apps that's the story. It's kind of the vision of the architecture, mm-hmm. right? Do you find that really some of the shifts that we're seeing now is all about, hey, how can I do things in the safest, most scalable, easiest possible way with the least risk, and just the platforms and the tooling have evolved to the point where you can do that while still having full control, versus before we were trying to kind of shoehorn that stuff into an environment where you had full control but also full risk?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that. I think what I'm seeing from most companies that I'm dealing with are a couple things. First, they're tired of doing all the hardware. And I look yeah. at it very much as, you know, I don't have a power plant or a water treatment facility in my backyard. I pay per usage to the local municipality to get that stuff. I don't need it. If I'm doing tax preparation stuff, I don't need a boatload of servers in June. I need them in March and April. So customers don't want to maintain the hardware. They don't want to pay for all that stuff. The other thing is they want the latest and greatest stuff, and they want it now. They don't want to wait for it. And what one of the motivations that Microsoft had, and while this is not one that they really talk about so much publicly, but this is where I get to play the advantage and say I don't have a blue badge or an orange badge, and so I can talk about – I can say this is what the customers are seeing, is that they – Microsoft would have a release of a new product of SharePoint 4 years after 2007 – 2000, one version would come out and we'd go like 3 or 4 years down the road and they would say, but only 50% of the customers have upgraded, but the majority of them have enterprise agreements. They have the licenses, they paid for it. They just haven't done it. Why haven't they done it? Because they have all this custom code buried deep inside SharePoint, and it's so much the test, it's so much of a burden that they don't upgrade to the latest and greatest. So they can't get the latest and greatest because of the burden to actually get there. So they don't do it. So that Microsoft, one of their big motivations with 365 is, if we can get people off of on-prem, if we can get them to the cloud, then we maintain the hardware, the software, the upgrade story. They get the latest and greatest, and they don't have this massive capital expense. They instead have this nice operating expense on a per-user basis going forward. customers love the story. The part that they're still trying to get over is that, you know, they've just got that culture of, I can go reboot the server when I want to reboot it. Mm-hmm. And I have the ability to do fully trusted stuff when I want to do it. And I also have the ability to do, I just blanked on the other one, what the other thing was, but doing fully trusted code and controlling my environment. But the people that are, the other thing I was going to say was the regulatory, challenges that we have with the cloud, but that's not a 365 thing. That's a cloud thing as far as I can see.
And so, I mean, yeah. Do you find that, like, because I've done IaaS support for, I guess, going on 12 months or so now. I usually find that people put these, you know, hey, I can't do X and I can't do Y. But a lot of times what they're saying is, well, I like to be able to do X and Y because I don't know another way to do it.
Do you find that
with the SharePoint stuff as well?
I see it a ton. I see a ton of that. I see people saying, okay, I don't want to go to 365 because I still want to be able to do X, Y, and Z, but I don't want to do the hardware. So let's put it all up in IaaS. And then we run into a challenge. SharePoint running in IaaS presents challenges because it is incredibly chatty with the databases. And the whole thing with you're limited on IOPS. And so you have to have SQL boxes that have a boatload of disks in them to take advantage of it or take advantage of these brand new machines that we got, last week. So I see a lot of that. I see a lot of people pushing back on it. But
do you see that even with, like, you know, some of the stuff you're talking about with the app models, and everything, you know, or doing these things in, you know, Azure Automation or leveraging the Azure components? Do you think it's the similar thing where it's, they want to do the fully trusted code in SharePoint because that's just what they've always done. They've not taken the time or had the opportunity to learn how to do it safer. Mm-hmm. And so they're not taking advantage of the new stuff because they just don't know that you can, okay, you have to change the way you're thinking about it, but you'll still get what you want.
Yes, I see a lot of that. I see a lot of that both from the business side. I see it from the administration side. Because I'm a developer and I normally speak to developers at like conferences and stuff like that, then I see it very acutely from the developer side. I mean, so much so that when we finally got support for Link in SharePoint, the language integrated query, we got it 4 or 5 years after it was introduced in the framework. And when you would sit in a classroom and try and explain it to people what Link was, you're teaching them something that's 4 or 5 years old. Yet to this crowd, it's brand new because they've lived in SharePoint and everything outside of SharePoint doesn't matter because SharePoint doesn't support it. So we can't take advantage of these cool new things. We're seeing the same thing on the Azure side. So this is, Sajid, one of the things you asked about earlier, like stuff, you know, the app model kind of taking off. This is one of the things where at Azure, actually, I think that I don't know if SharePoint and 365 are the one that drove this feature, but it's something that came out of the whole identity side. I think Vittorio's group.
Right.
I might be saying his name wrong. But we have this thing where in Office 365, when you sign up for a 365 tenant, you get a directory behind the scenes. And so all the users for your company are going to go inside that directory and you can set up things like, you know, dir sync and password synchronization, all that stuff. Under the covers, that's an Azure AD directory. And in the last few months, we've now been able to go into our Azure subscription and link that together so that now you could have, that's when we started to be able to sign in with your organization ID into Azure when those IDs when they finally started sharing the same directory. And then the part that's gotten really interesting is that the app model piece of registering apps in Office 365, that's actually driven by Azure ACS. That capability has now been surfaced inside of Azure AD so that if I go inside my Azure AD directory, I see this new preview thing in the links at the top that say applications. When I go in there, I can create an application. And when my custom thing that I build, when it authenticates with that application I've defined inside of Azure AD, mm-hmm. it gets an OAuth access token that works not only in Azure, but Office 365 is trusting the same source of that token. So we can now create – this is the part that customers are really starting to get really impressed with, is that we can create applications now in Azure that we don't do anything on the 365 side to make these things work. but we can create the whole thing in Azure and it can talk straight to SharePoint and do stuff on the user's behalf inside of their SharePoint environments. That was actually one of the ones that when I emailed you guys, about, you know, talking about some stuff with, Azure and Office 365, that was a sample that I did recently for the Office Dev. Well, it's for the developer team, the developer marketing team for 365. They have an account on GitHub.
Okay.
GitHub.com/Office Dev. And there's a sample that we did where you don't do anything in SharePoint, but you do everything over in Azure. And when you actually run the sample, it goes and creates lists and libraries inside your SharePoint site for you and reads and writes to lists. So, but the application had nothing. We didn't have to set a single thing up in 365 to make it work. The only requirement is that the user that was using the application had the rights to read and write stuff to lists.
That's amazing. So you're using some of the REST APIs exposed by the SharePoint Online?
Yes, we are. Yeah, we're using the same ones. We're using the REST APIs from from SharePoint to read and write to lists from Azure. But the app is living inside, Azure, and it's an Azure website with a single page app kind of surface to it. We had to have some sort of a server touch point because we're authenticating using OAuth. And so once you get an access token, that's like cold hard cash. It doesn't matter who got it. Whoever has it can use it.
Right.
So we did a server side solution to keep the token in cash in an Azure website using ASP.NET Web API. And then had a authentication piece between the web app and the web API so that they could then kind of do the handshake. He could do the intermediary back to Office 365.
And, I see. And for that, and this used to be the case, I honestly haven't checked, you know, hopefully you may know off the top of your head, but it used to be that we gave X number of free websites per data center to anybody that signed up. So in essence, that website didn't cost you anything other than some egress traffic.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, so it's super cheap for something that gives you really good security on your token.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? You get,
I think it's 10 or no?
Yeah. You get 10 free websites, yeah. And you're throttled on how much outbound data you can send per day. And yep. You're also throttled on what you can do over the course of a month.
Yep.
Now that, you know, with every, if you don't do custom domains, it's still free and you get an SSL endpoint so that you can talk to HTTPS, whatever you pick, yeah. .azurewebsites.net. And I mean, you can get a full blown application going that way. And a lot of these apps they're not heavily used. I've got a couple customers where we're using this model. We're using a single Azure website to host 10 separate web applications.
Even scaling within the website. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so we're scaling within the website. So we're using one for 10 different web apps. I should just say 8 because now we have 10 and 10. Those can get confusing. But we have a bunch of websites. When you go in, you launch the application. You're actually launching it from a link inside SharePoint. The user has no clue that they're outside of SharePoint unless they watch the URL and they can see it's different because the user experience is identical to the site they came from, all the way down to the theming and stuff. But because we're all stored in the same website, we built everything as single page apps. So the traffic between the ASP.NET, between the Azure website and our web application that's running in the client, because it's only data is being exchanged. We're not redoing full page refreshes. Yep. We are staying well under those thresholds. And so we've got, I mean, one site's hosting 8 different apps for one organization that's got about 7,500 users. So
wow.
It goes a long way.
Yeah, and imagine what the infrastructure cost would be for this organization, you know, if they didn't have a DMZ server already in existence to go do this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's exceedingly non-trivial, right? To go set that all up and manage it and make sure it's secure and everything else, and here you just throw it in a website.
It was funny because I sat down when we were explaining this, we could say we could do this with the customer, and we told them, you know, it was with a company that has like an internal dev shop that services the rest of the organization. And they were like, we don't have the budget to go through and do something, you know, extravagant or whatever. And it's like, let's just use a free one because based on your metrics, we're going to stay under the number.
Yeah.
They didn't buy it, but we did it anyway. And they said, well, what happens when we have a spike? Because a couple times a year we do have a spike. I said, can you get funding for that spike? And they said, yeah. I said, well, you're not going to believe this, but it actually is this easy. If you can go through and make sure you have a credit card on your subscription, all you do is go into the website, flip it over to a standard, throw three instances at it, give it a few seconds, and poof, it'll all be up and running again, and it'll even be faster than it was originally. He's like, yeah, but how much is that going to cost? I'm like, to be honest, I'm doing that with one site for about $60 a month. They just kind of looked at me, their jaws hit the ground. Like, you got to be kidding me. The first time it happened, I can't repeat what he said on the phone because I'm sure, I don't know, I don't want to ask you guys to censor some words out, but he dropped all these expletives like going, I can't believe it was that, lots of expletives, easy. He said, you got to be kidding me. He goes, I'm a hero of my organization.
See, that, like, hey, see, you know,
call me back, man. More work. Just call me back.
Yeah. As a support guy, right? I make the joke I make is nobody ever calls me to say that my product is awesome, right? It's always my product is horrible and this is broken, that's broken. And usually when I hear the expletives, it's because they don't like something about my product. You know, so that's actually really cool to hear that the other way.
It's really, really nice to hear that, you know, how customers are actually using this. And Andrew, you're doing, I must say, you're doing an excellent job in carrying the story forward. We're really, really well-positioned story.
It's fun. I mean, I believe that this is where the world's going. I mean, I'm working on I have a startup of my own that I'm working on that's all based on, built on PaaS and Azure, but it's all about managing IaaS and actually something that you talked about earlier, Evan, which is people leave their VMs running overnight. We actually turn the lights off for you at night for like build and test VMs. So that's my little thing that's trying to get me out of the consulting side and just do just product stuff. So it's a lot of fun and customers freaking love it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's amazing. Yeah. Now, Andrew, what was the effort involved for you to get into the Azure development space? Like when you figured out that you had to build these websites and these SPA applications, how much of an effort was it for you, given your background in SharePoint development?
I tried it a lot a long time ago. And I say a long time ago, I'm talking back in the Silverlight admin days, when we had the Silverlight portal. And since Scott Guthrie took over and all the changes that I saw he made, specifically around websites, working with Service Bus and stuff, it was surprisingly easy. I hope this doesn't come across the wrong way for the 365 and SharePoint guys, but with all the stuff that we've had to deal with SharePoint in the last decade, it was incredibly easy. I mean, when you look over just the way that the documentation is done, the way that the APIs are versioned, we're constantly, when we're giving feedback to the product group, I do some work and some side consulting and stuff with the engineering team on the 365 team, and I'm constantly saying, look at how the Azure guys do this. This is what you guys need to do. You guys need to do these things over here. I mean, the Azure side is being a very good model for what they're trying to do in 365.
What else the team should be doing? Yeah.
It really is. It's doing a really good job. I mean, specifically right now, that's my big soapbox now is versioning of the APIs, because they don't version the APIs, and that's just, the Azure team does a good job with it. So I'm trying to get them to kind of like going, look, you guys work for the same company. You got to go talk to those guys.
Nope. We can't have two different departments talking. That is,
well, it takes an outsider to link two departments. That's what it all comes down to.
Yeah.
It does.
So I know it's, I don't want to, make this too long because we've already spent a lot of time talking about this, but I want to find out about your development environment. You have an interesting environment. You do a lot of your work on a Mac. How's that working for you as it relates to Azure development?
It works really good. So I was a Windows guy forever until maybe 10 months ago, and I switched only under duress, where I was in the middle of a project 2 weeks before Christmas. I had to deliver I won't use the vendor name, my laptop. The motherboard literally just got fried. It was a year and a half old machine, and I was going to be six weeks before I could even get a new machine. That's the downside of doing SharePoint work, is that I can't go to a store and buy the machine I need. It's one of those special order from Lenovo or Dell and max it out.
Yeah.
And I walked into the Apple store, and they had a 14-day return policy. I knew from a friend of mine, I knew that I could at least get by for the next 2 weeks based on what they had. And frankly, it just it worked great for me just because of the size factor, but size and weight and the amount I travel. But as far as like Azure development, it works really good. So when I need to get in, the only time I'm really in Windows these days is when I'm doing, when I need Visual Studio or when I need to manage my inbox rules for Exchange and Outlook, because no other experience works really well. So I'll jump over and use Visual Studio, you know, when I need to use Visual Studio, but I'm spending a lot more time these days, doing things with Xamarin when I can, for building, still doing .NET stuff with Xamarin. But the one that I'm really starting to spend a lot more time with lately, for specifically around Azure apps or apps I'm building in Azure is, on the Node.js stack.
So the CLI, the Azure CLI stuff.
Yeah. So for managing my stuff, I use the CLI a lot. I use that to manage when I'm doing anything command line stuff, I use that. I like it a lot more than doing standard command line stuff. And it's not a shot against PowerShell or anything, but it's like I'm doing development, but I'm doing development as an admin because you have a bunch of things that are available to you, but I can just write scripts and stuff in a much easier way. That's all JavaScript based. And what's really neat about it is there's this whole like task running process. There's two different main ones that are that are used in the community. One's called Grunt and one's called Gulp. You got to love these names.
Mm-hmm.
And the neat one is, I mean, Gulp, they're both built on top of Node.js, and I can fire up a Gulp task and build a custom Gulp task that, literally right now I've got one I'm doing for a Node.js app where as I'm building it, it's got something running. It's constantly doing like running my tests in one window while I'm coding it. So if a red thing pops up, I know to stop and take a look at it and see what I just broke. When everything's good, I save everything, commit it into my source, but then I run another task and it takes all my changes, grabs all the stuff from my local source, compiles it down and everything, makes it all into the nice minified JavaScript files. Sends it over, connects to my Azure environment, sets up a new deployment slot if I need a new deployment slot using the CLI, and then does a commit against a GitHub repository, and I've configured that development slot to automatically pull from that GitHub branch in that repository every time it sees a commit come into it.
Nice.
So all from just one thing, it's seamless all the way through. It's just, it's a really good story, and it's part the fact that, you know, you guys are being so much more open with the open source stuff and what's really working in the industry.
That's great to hear that. It's great to hear from somebody outside of the company that, you know, that's useful.
I'll put it this way. I've been a Microsoft guy for well over a decade now. It is, the last year has been very eye-opening and surprising. Even just seeing like the news around the Redis cache about, this isn't the way that I'm sure that that you guys would market it, but Azure's basically saying, hey, all these other cache solutions we've had, we're shutting them all down. Switch over to this open source thing called Redis that we now support. This is the way that the industry's going. And it is awesome to see that kind of stuff coming, out of Redmond these days.
Excellent. That's really great feedback.
We had a long conversation. I don't know. Golly, it's probably been weeks and weeks and weeks ago now, Tizzy. But remember, we were talking about when we first changed the name from Windows Azure to Microsoft Azure.
Yeah.
Right. And what it really meant. And I think some of the things Andrew's talking about really are the manifestation of, you know, that vision, right? With that change of like, you know what? We're just a platform. Come do whatever you want. And
it's not
great
about Windows anymore.
Yeah. It's great, Andrew, to hear that that actually is really coming true for somebody who is a self-professed, you know, Microsoft stack person. And here you've just spent the last, you know, five or six minutes, you know, waxing on very happily about Mac plus, you know, some Node.js stuff. And yet you're still sitting on top of Azure.
Oh, yeah. I tell you, it's, when, When Steve Ballmer,
you're gonna stop calling yourself a Microsoft guy and start calling yourself like an Azure guy or something.
I'm trying to be like the I want to be more like the JavaScript guy or whatever. And so it's funny because the SharePoint team's like, you're building a Node.js app that's talking to 365. It's like, yeah, it's gonna run on Azure. It's like, can we get a look at that? I'm like, can we kind of work out some kind of work that we can do here? I could build some samples or something. But I'm an independent guy. It's when Steve Ballmer stepped down, they started having all the names that were floating around. It was just seeing the direction that Azure was going. I had a bet with somebody over in the 365 in the SharePoint side. And I was like, my guy, the guy I'm hooking my reins to is going to be Satya. That's the guy I want because he's been doing amazing over here. He's got a much more open mind the way the company has been working in the last decade. This is what Microsoft needs. And of course, I'm glad I won that bet compared to the person he was betting on. So it's awesome the way it's working out. So it's a lot of fun and you don't have to be a .NET guy to build on Azure. It's a killer platform for open to everybody. So
that's great. Yeah. Andrew, let our listeners know what the name of your podcast is and what your show is.
Yeah. So you can find me, just andrewconnell.com or on Twitter at Andrew Connell. The podcast is, the Microsoft Cloud Show where we talk about 365, Office 365, SharePoint and the competing stuff as well. And then there's a lot of SharePoint stuff in there too, because that's generally where my audience is. That's Microsoft Cloud Show, MicrosoftCloudShow.com or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And then the startup I'm doing is we're still in pre-MVP stuff, but it's called Curb. So it's a play on Curb Your Spend, but it's KERRB.com. And that's the one that we automatically shut VMs off for you on a schedule. So
excellent.
Yep.
It's great to hear that. So, thanks
for coming, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
It was great talking to you, Andrew. Appreciate your time. And sure, our listeners got a lot out of this as well. So we'll talk, Evan. I'll talk to you next week.
Yep, sounds good. Right. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Evan. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle, @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.